Hey there, you big stupid heads. Henry Raby here with another instalment of the Nerd Punks podcast. I'm chatting with Tom Dransfield, who is one third of WMD Comedy. They release new sketches every week onto the internet, as well as do live performances of their sketches. Tom works with Ben Winterton and Ryan McCann to produce these strange snapshot sketches, which are often surreal and always hilarious. So without further ado, here's my interview. The Nerd Punks. Tom is a sketch writer, sketch performer, and sketch producer. Do you feel like you have all these different heads when you do sketches?
Yeah, I do, unfortunately. Because I always pitch myself as a comedian and a writer, I suppose, more than anything else. But it's annoying when you're trying to start, like, making sketches. You know, if you want to make something funny and what you know is funny, you also have to be able to direct or something. So, yeah, eventually you just start becoming average at everything, which is
a sketch person,
yeah.
A person of sketches.
Yeah.
So tell us about the stuff you do with WMD Comedy.
So I'm part of WMD Comedy. So we're on Facebook. WM, like Weapons of Mass Destruction, also happens to just be like our surnames, which is Winterton, McCann, and Dransfield, me being the third part. With my friends Ben Winterton, Ryan McCann. So we make new sketches, release them every week, just making like little, yeah, as you say, sort of DIY sketch comedy that we then put online for some reason.
That always seems, I love the sketches, but it always seems a trial to do one a week. Is that true, or is that like, no, we'll bash them out in a week, it's easy, mate, crack on.
Yeah, I think it's definitely true as well, especially as your standards of what you consider to be good increase. Like, when we started, we thought, okay, let's do one a week, we'll see how we go, maybe we'll stop in a month, maybe we'll keep on going. And that was more than a year ago, so we have just kept on doing them. But I remember when we started, we at one point could film four or five in a weekend, and we were like, great, we're sorted, we're ages for us now. Like, it takes us like a week to film one, and then obviously all you're doing is treading water.
Why has that changed?
I just think because, your time commitment of everything increases, so as you're writing more elaborate, ambitious stuff, the production, like, just increases, and everything, like, sort of spirals out of control, so everything comes down to time.
I think the first few you've got, like, you can really tell that you improved on the quality of the cameras, and I know that you kind of invested as a group in more, better equipment, really, and you can see that progression, and the sketches as well become, as you say, more elaborate, and you bring different people in and use different props and stuff as it goes on.
Yeah, so that was exciting for us as like a big leap forward, maybe like sort of 6 months ago or so or more, when we just like started actually putting money into like the projects we were making. And so we got that leap in camera quality, but also like the very beginning, we would sort of just grab a camera and sort of point it at both of us and then start making things. We just read out our lines and say all the jokes, whereas now we spend so much more time thinking like, oh, how do we set up this shot, how do we make this interesting and stuff. So yeah, everything just like has required so much more time now,
and that feels really interesting, connected to the punk ideology. And I'm back to why bloody hell I'm doing this podcast.
Sure, I forgot you didn't mention that at the start.
something that I think is maybe a misconception that I'm interested in unpacking about punk is that it always has to be really simple and always has to be stripped down. It can never grow. And it's the whole, like, here's three chords, now go form a band. And actually something that a few people I've spoken to talk about is, no. You start, anyone can do it, you start with three chords, but the point is everyone has an equal playing field of starting with three chords, if in a music analogy, and then growing from there and getting better, and that's where that kind of anyone can do it, because anyone has that starting point. And I think maybe that's seems similar to you guys, is we started off at this kind of real base level of just grabbing a camera, just reading some lines, just having a go at it, and then we have built on it, and that's not like selling out or anyway, or like just because we've got a better camera, there's better production value, so that loses some of that DIY quality. It's about creating something on top of that from the foundations.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting as you say, like, so I think you gain sometimes a lot of creativity from your limitations. So something like, yeah, as you say with the Ramones, like they only know a handful of chords. I'm not sure anymore, but so they...
No, I'm pretty sure it's just a handful.
So they construct like interesting, unique songs using four of the same chords, and it doesn't have to turn into math rock, but it can still make something really interesting. There's a band that I became obsessed with this year called No Bunny.
Okay.
I don't know if you've listened to much of them, and they... the guy, again, similarly, like, just uses, like, major chords, but his songwriting is so interesting and unique that he, like, plays around with rhythm and things and just, like, makes really catchy tunes that sound different to most sort of punk, garagey stuff just by being inventive with it. And so I think that's part of something that we try to adopt. So whilst our production values have increased, we've not got CGI spaceships or anything. So
if yet.
yet. So if you want to make a science fiction sketch, you have to think, okay, they're trapped inside a vault or something on the ship so that you can film it in somebody's two-person flat rather than on a studio stage.
Is there any sketches that spring to mind that kind of where you feel like it's, you know, it has that kind of... like fun DIY, we just come up with this idea, but like maybe you've taken it to the next level with the production of it or the way you played around with it.
Yeah, there are some that are quite interesting for, you wouldn't sort of imagine where they have been recorded. So there's one where we have to go down to a fallout shelter, and so we did that sort of like, yeah, as I say, just with a handheld camera sort of facing up at us, and a red light bulb. So there's sort of like, there's darkness all the way through the beginning, the sketch is shaking around, you can hear like meteors crashing and things like that. And then they enter into this room and they just switch on a red light. I say they, I mean us.
The characters of you, yeah. Because sometimes you play versions of yourself as well in...
Yeah, true. Yeah. And so you try and sort of get that across, and then you can do a lot with like stock footage and things as well, I found. So in the way that you establish things, if you show somebody an establishing shot of an office or... a bar or a house, or in this case, you know, an apocalyptic wasteland that we had to use, sort of, there were some shots, there are some really creepy shots of Chernobyl that are they're on the internet for everyone to see, and that obviously just looks like a nuclear wasteland for good reason, and some other like really desolate places. If you show people shots of that and then next you show them a small cramped bedroom, they think, okay, that bedroom is inside this space. So that was something we sort of learned, that obviously all TV shows will sort of do. They'll tell you, oh, now we're going across town to this bar.
Yeah.
Whereas actually they're in the same set. They're just one room over or something. So, yeah.
And that is that something that you've learned over this process from, is that, I mean, obviously when you say, like, we know this, but, like, is that something that you've learned to apply to as a kind of filmmaker, sketch maker over the past kind of year or so of making?
Yeah, so we sort of just do that functionally. I guess, yeah, maybe again in a very sort of basic way. I didn't go to any film school or anything like that, not deliberately, but so everything that we've learned, we've just sort of learned by making bad mistakes and then going, that doesn't work.
This is desperately unfunny.
Yeah.
Or then, desperately funny.
Yeah, or like the funny is sometimes trapped behind terrible production. So, even though the idea or the joke is funny, if it's not clear, nobody can, like, you know, relate to it or find it funny. So, yeah, that's quite tough.
So what sort of stuff do you find funny? What are the influences, kind of, comedy-wise?
I know a big one for us is The Whitest Kids You Know do a lot of... They do, like, a similar thing. They have a TV show. It's, like, they're an American sketch group, and they have loads of stuff online. They're one of the biggest, like, online sketch groups, and they have loads of stuff on YouTube and things, and they do like a similar sort of thing. I think their idols are like sort of Monty Python, so they're like one removed from that, and they do very, like, sort of Python-esque sketches but in an American way, which is quite good, and Lily Show as well.
Yeah,
I think he's pretty popular, and so his sort of stuff is really good, and the way that it sort of plays with the form and things, I think is really great. And his work is like really anarchic as well, I think, too. So
I've not watched particularly much of Lemmy Show, but what I have seen, sometimes I go, I'm not sure if this is funny or not. I'm kind of enjoying it, but I'm not sure whether, like, I'm waiting for the gag, I'm waiting for the punchline to kind of come, and sometimes he kind of whips the rug from underneath you and goes, Oh no, there's no punchline. It was just a little bit of manicness from my brain that I put into a 2 minute scene.
Yeah, and I think that's really cool. And I think something that is a bit of a shame about where we are at the moment, whilst I enjoy what we're doing, is that like we're always trying to make something that will appeal to people. So there's some stuff that we make for ourselves, but like we don't want to do too much stuff that is just like anti-comedy and doesn't have any punchlines to it or anything. Because if you release it as a sketch and say, "Oh, this is really funny, you should watch it," whereas actually it just isn't, and it's just a bit weird, people won't enjoy it, and they won't like, I don't know. And so we try to do some stuff that will have an element of broad appeal, but don't want to. You're trying to tread that line without selling out too much and just making those sketches that you see, which are like, when girls are getting ready, or when your mum walks in on, you know, and they have the big banners and stuff. I don't know how applicable those are, but they're all over my Facebook feed. Of what I'd call like the really easy access stuff that you can just watch for 10 seconds and you immediately understand, or the more like story-based things.
There's kind of the Vine culture. I think Vines maybe aren't as popular as they were a couple of years ago, unless maybe they're just not cropping up in my world as much as they seem to do, unless they're an American thing. But for whatever reason, the kind of the Vineness of just like, bam, here's a joke, here's a quick joke for you, is kind of the fallout from a kind of generation that grew up on Family Guy, versus like what I really like about what you guys do is over the course of several sketches, there'll be recurring gags and repeating jokes, and there'll be you guys fill in different characters quite comfortably. To the extent I have shown it to some mates, and they've not laughed as much when I've gone, "Oh no, but that's." A, I mean, I quite enjoy that about watching a sketch troupe that have that kind of consistency. Maybe like you say, Monty Python before, like they all kind of filled in whichever role was the usual thing that appealed to that actor.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that's just put in like the Whitest Kids as well, and something that we just directly lifted from them is that like they always refer to themselves as the character. So every time that you see Ben in a sketch or Tom in a sketch, their names are all 99% of the time just Ben or Tom, which I think is maybe a bit of a reward for people who regularly watch, because you can sort of, you can try and paint like a narrative arc to it and assume that this all happens to the same two guys who live in, even though sometimes I'll be an astronaut and other times I'll be the prime minister or something. I think it's quite good that, yeah, they always have the same name. And you can see it in Monty Python too, where John Cleese will always play the character who completely loses his mind, and Eric Idle will always play like sort of the cheeky character. So yeah, I don't know. We just sort of took that too.
So the listener at the moment might be going, "Well, why are you just chatting to Tom and not Ryan and Ben of this thing? You know, why is Tom the spokesperson?" But the reason is because I remember watching some sketches and before I kind of had met Tom and Ryan, because Ben is one of my good friends in the sketch troupe, and I was like, is that a black flag tattoo on? And Tom's wearing a black flag tattoo. And I'll be honest, Tom, I'm just curious to your reaction is that you seem a very amicable person and a chilled out person, lovely and friendly and funny. I'm a big black flag fan as well, but that's kind of, I just wouldn't associate with that music. So I'm kind of interested as to why it is that you kind of have this love for such a aggressive, hardcore band, and whether there is humour inside Black Flag that I'm kind of missing.
Yeah, I don't really know, to be honest.
And that's the answer. Thanks, Tom. Well, this has been Of the Nervous Podcast.
This would be your shortest podcast ever. yeah, I guess it was just something that I really got into as a teenager. And I think did have a big influence on me, which is why I decided to get like a few punk tattoos and things. And I think there is a lot of like humour in those guys. Like, I only have two tattoos at the moment. I've got Black Flag and I've got Devo. With Black Flag, like, so much of it was about, these people who were just sort of finished being teenagers themselves. They were really frustrated with their situation, and they were trying to carve something unique as well. And I think, like, for anyone who's going through puberty and is really sort of struggling to find any kind of identity, and maybe you're a bit odd or a bit weird, and you don't really like the sort of stuff that most people like, it's really satisfying to listen to a band that goes, "Oh yeah, all that stuff sucks."
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, it does. I remember that, so I think I'm sort of creatively quite a snobbish person. I see a lot of things on TV and I think, oh, that's rubbish. Like, stop laughing. That's not funny.
There's one, it feels quite an old sketch, but it's one of my favourites of you guys, which is we've lost the laughter track, and you go through all the different ways you could make someone laugh, and it's kind of poking fun at like sitcoms that rely on generic safe tropes to get a laugh, to tell the audience this is a funny moment.
So we do a bit in that sort of sketch. It's like we set it up as if in the world as normal there is a laughter track, so that every time somebody says something a bit funny, there's immediately like as if me and you talking now, anytime one of us made a joke, there would be something very clearly telling you that a joke has been made. And then, so you set that up as the norm, and then you strip it away, and those characters go insane.
Yes.
Like you would on The Truman Show, as an example, you know, because you're used to something operating in a sort of very traditional way, and then as soon as it actually comes back to reality, those characters can't handle it and sort of tear themselves apart. And so as I was saying, with like being a critical person, I remember the first time that I noticed that something sucked was when I went to see... Star Wars, the Clone Wars? You know, the second one of the
prequels. Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones, yeah. Right. So, Oh no, you love it.
No, I'm bitterly horrified that it exists.
Oh,
and that
okay. Well, that's a huge relief.
I think it's, as much as Phantom Menace is awful, just on this tangent, I think it's the worst because they didn't learn the lessons from a Phantom Menace.
Sure.
So they made a terrible, terrible film, and everyone panned it and said, this is terrible, and then they just made Attack of the Clones, which is just, is just as bad and awful, and at least Revenge of the Sith, they did have a bash, but like so I would rather watch Phantom Menace because they were at least going, here's this whole new world, we're going to try and create the prequel world,
yeah.
Whereas Attack of the Clones is just nonsense.
And so for me as well, as like a young kid, when I first went to see The Phantom Menace, I think I was like 10 or maybe like a little bit older, and I saw that and like I was too young to know better. And so I just saw it and I was like, oh cool, there's aliens, there's Yoda, you know, there's all lightsaber and stuff, cool. This is great. And then when I went to see Attack of the Clones, I came out of the cinema and it was the first thing that I didn't like that I'd seen at the cinema, and I was like, I'm confused. That was boring. What's happened?
Oh,
and I remember at the time all my friends were like, what's wrong with you? It was great. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. Something has changed. And so I think at that point I started hating lots of things.
And thus began my long, term career as a professional hater of things.
Yeah.
That's great. You can pin it to that moment and go, this is when I started to hate things.
Yeah, it's like when people are reborn into a religion or something. But I thought there was a nicer moral to that story, but there isn't. So I think that's when it started for me. And so after you dislike things like that, but everyone else sort of seems to disagree with you, and you don't know why, that's, I think, when I sort of started to find punk, and I found all these people who, again, hated lots of things too.
Yeah.
And you're like, right on, cool. Why not? So, yeah, so I think they do have, like, Black Flag do have a lot of that in them. And as regards to the humour thing, Henry Rollins particularly is basically a stand-up now as well, effectively. Like, with the spoken word tours and things, if you watch them. I know he does some sort of serious monologues and things like that in it as well, but, like, he's sort of telling funny anecdotes and things. So he's sort of like an angry stand-up in a way.
I come a few years ago at Edinburgh, and I think some of the, and I just can't quite remember what he talked about. It was like a 2-hour show, so obviously he talked about a lot of stuff. You can't remember everything, but I can't quite place what he said. And I've got his kind of spoken word albums and stuff. But if someone said, oh, like, you know, what does he talk about? I'd go, he just kind of talks about things. Like, I get, but and I guess that he has that kind of quality of that entertainer, the compere, the ringmaster, if you will, that's able to kind of cover a huge range of topics, and some of them very dark and weird and very punk and aggressive, and some, as you say, like really funny and laugh out loud and into the realm of a spoken word comedian.
Yeah, and like you can tell stories about like when he went to the bank or something,
yeah,
and he had to queue up and that was annoying for him, and stuff that sounds really generic and boring. But I guess it's just in the way that he tells it or something, it just seems much more interesting. That why.
I do remember one actually when he talks about going to see Van Halen, and he talks about like it being a bit guilty and a bit cool and like kind of going to see this band that he was into before he kind of got into the punk scene and yeah, that has all the aspects of just a stand-up comedian telling, doing a routine about something, yeah. but it probably isn't necessarily a scripted routine. It's just him going, I'm just gonna tell this funny story. When me and my mate were like, do you want to go get tickets to Van Halen? I think it was Van Halen, one of them bands.
I think the guy as well, like the way that he delivers it, I think like part of his like unique aspect is like how relentlessly he delivers it, because I went to see him again live at one point a couple of years ago, and it says like, okay, show starts at 8 o'clock, and he means like he puts his first foot on the stage 8 o'clock and then he talks for 2 hours almost without breathing, and then he leaves at 10 o'clock and that is it, like, you know. So I think that's sort of stripped down and basic, and you know, it's like going to see a Ramones gig where they play an hour and a half of 3-minute songs and then they leave and there's no encore, and that's what they do. It's like that kind of spoken word comedy, I guess you would call it, really.
So I asked you before because I wasn't too sure if you did stand-up comedy. You say not anymore because it's awful. Was that a reference to kind of the ecology of stand-up and the community and the way it works? Is that something that you rail against as a Black Flag fanatic and you're hating?
No, not really. I don't know. I just stand up for quite a while, especially at uni and things, and I can't really get to grips with it anymore. Now, like, so I went to Edinburgh and I saw all sorts of things there and things. Now when I sort of watch it, it's very excruciating to watch. Like, I got into it because I used to love it and used to just absorb it, and anytime I could see any stand-up, I would go and see it and check out what it was about. And then I feel like I've seen too much of it now.
Seen too much, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Things I've seen.
To be able to enjoy it anymore. And so, I don't know, I wasn't a great stand-up, so I think if I wrote something, I couldn't make it. Any better than sort of something that's very average anyway, so I wouldn't really try. So yeah, that's what I mean when I say stand-up's horrible, is that I hate watching it all, which is a pretty big deal.
But you are a sketch writer, so I just wondered, like, is there a process you go through? Is there, like, do you have, like, several ideas that you're playing with? It's like, germ of ideas? How is the kind of process from getting the idea through to then kind of putting it on the page to then rehearsing it and doing it in front of a camera?
Yeah, it's it depends, really. It varies. So sometimes it'll be a really short process. Sometimes we sit down, sort of on the day, thinking we've got nothing and we need to record something because it has to come out on Friday. And so having that pressing deadline inspires us to have to make something. So sometimes we'll sit around and we'll improvise for a little bit or talk about some ideas and stuff until we latch onto an idea. And then generally, if we start laughing, that's a good sign, and we'll try and take all of those moments and put them together and make them into something. Other times you have to sit down, you know, and just think, I need to write something today. And then, you know, you have to sort of push it until it works. I'm sure you found a similar thing yourself as a writer. And I heard somebody describing it, or you know, sort of talking about a decent way to go about writing. If you want to call yourself a writer, you just have to write, I suppose. So to sort of try and do it every day or as often as possible. And on some days it will be really tough and it won't work for you at all. And then on other days it will just work for some reason and it will just flow. So you could sit down and try to write on Monday, on Tuesday and on Wednesday. And maybe your first 2 days are almost a complete wash. But on Wednesday you finally manage to break through and get something done. So I think it's sort of a process like that, really. And then we meet up and either agree on ideas and have a great time or argue and it's the same process. Either it completely flows and it's like a really enjoyable process from script to screen, or it's a bit of struggle all the way up to, until we've made something that sort of makes everybody a bit happy.
Do you, when you have like an idea and you're editing and playing with the sketch idea, do you set it to the side and work another sketch, or do you have a few on the go, or do you go, I'm going to definitely nail this one before I move on to the next sketch?
I think we sort of have just like a huge bag of like different ideas that are at different stages, so we sort of break it down into different documents. So we've got like a list of just a bunch of different ideas where we were like, oh, that's a funny little nugget, and then you put it away. And we've got like some scripts that are partially formed, and we've got some stuff that's written, but it's going to be a massive pain to try and shoot, so we're not shooting those for a while, and so stuff like, so everything falls into one of those categories basically, and so that's all right. But I think you've got to try and enjoy the process as well, and so I think I found that more than anything else, is because I used to play in a few bands and things myself around London, and I found that being in any sort of like creative group, I found a direct mirror to being in a band with something like that. And so, you know, it's really difficult to get people together, to get anyone organized. I was a drummer in a few bands, and like, I'm a pretty terrible drummer, but I was prepared to show up to all the practices and could make all the gigs. And so you could have the best drummer in the world, but if he's not available, he's not as useful to you as the guy who can just about hold a rhythm together, but can be there on the day. So, I sort of find something like that.
I think that it's interesting kind of thinking about creative processes and being a creative, being an artist, like putting out writing stuff, like and linking it back to punk, to use the example of bands like, I mean, obviously this is very 70s punk, but bands like kind of Sex Pistols are kind of presented as being really snotty and snobby and teenagers, and they don't look like they work very hard. They kind of just like they joke a lot about, oh, we got all this money and from record deals, and we've just spent it on stuff and bits, and there's a kind of a grottiness that has a negative. But I'd say that and this goes for kind of any band, but like especially kind of punk, when you have a very DIY ethos and you go, we're not gonna sniff out the record labels, we're not gonna pander, we're not gonna try and adapt to a certain way of being, is harder, it's harder work. And I think maybe as a kind of sketch writer in kind of working in like this format of like, we have to create something every Friday, we have to put it out on our own steam. You guys all live in different cities as well, so that's also an element we've not talked about, that kind of heart, that commitment can sometimes make the work better, because you really care about it, and despite you putting the limitations on it, the constraints on it, the fact that gives some creative freedom to, it's interesting stuff can happen from that process.
Yeah, definitely. And so I think like so much of it as well comes down to trying to enjoy the process when you can. It's not always pleasant, to be honest, like you're trying to do your best, but like I think rather than seeing it as like a means to an end of like, okay, so we'll keep on doing this, and then if we do this and this and this for years and years, maybe we'll finally get to the point where we're at X point or something like that, or, you know, or we get a TV show or something like that. I mean, if you can try and enjoy what you're doing at the moment and make the best thing possible, then if that can bring you satisfaction, then it's like you've already won in a way, because you're like, ha-ha, like, you know, I am successful.
I'm fulfilled and having fun, and my friends are great, and we're doing what we want to do, so fuck you, world.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I've defined my own success, so I've already done it. So that works quite well sometimes, and it's a difficult perspective to get into as well, because sometimes I like, so obviously I live in Manchester and Ben lives in York, which is quite far away, and it takes up most of our weekend stuff to go and like film these sketches. He works Monday to Friday, and so do I, and so often on a Saturday night or a Sunday morning, people will ask me like what I'm up to or something like that, and I'm like, oh, I have to go to York and do some stuff, and then as I hear myself say the words, I try and change it in my head so that I'm like, no, wait, I get to go to York and make something that I really enjoy and care about and I'm passionate about with a good friend of mine to try and make some interesting weird things that brings me a lot of satisfaction and that I get some positive results from. So yeah, I try and enjoy it like that, really.
Great. Well, I'm just going to ask one last question before I kind of wrap up, and it just in the for the sake of balance, so we've talked about the Black Flag tattoo, but you've also got the Devo tattoo, but obviously there's loads of humour in what Devo do. They're very fun and strange and surreal. I don't know if there's anything you want to say about what, like, I think that, you know, absolutely Black Flag and Devo are both punk bands, but very different punk bands, so I just wondered about the balance you have between your love for the very angry, angsty Black Flag and then the very kind of fun, strange, odd Devo.
Yeah, I mean, Devo. I guess it would come into your your nerd punk thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Black Flag sort of represents some of the most hardcore. You know, I'm sure you could find grungier and more aggressive if you wanted. And Devo are like sort of the very nerdy craft work bloop, 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 section of it. What I really admire about Devo, to be fair, is their idea about, I guess, owning that nerd aspect of it, and telling people that that's what's cool now, because of course, like, you know, they just say that it is, and that like makes it so sort of thing. So they have that song where they talk about they're through being cool, and they're going to now sort of own their nerd life, and they're going to meet up with other people who are similar to them and like-minded and create stuff that way. And so I think that's something I really respect about them, is that they don't have to take themselves seriously in order to be cool. And that was sort of like one of the early lessons that I learned when I was like a teenager, was just trying to be cool for such a long time, and then realised that you'd have to look or act a certain way in order to be cool. It was sort of about who you were more so than that.
Okay, so just be yourself, kids.
This is it. God, am I actually...
Hey kids, it's cool to be a nerd, and it's nerdy to be cool.
Yeah, I mean, so like one of my favorite bands, this band that I have played with in this scene, called Hot Gothic, and they're a two-piece, I think sometimes a three-piece band who are in sort of the underground London scene, and they're a real source of inspiration for me. Because they do that ethos of like, they seem to really enjoy the level that they're at, and playing in front of their friends, like some of the best vibes that they can get, and they really enjoy it whilst they're doing it. And they look like quite aggressive, so they've got like sort of slick back hairs and play sort of this in your face music. And then you go up to speak to them, and I'm like, oh, hello, my name's Tom, I like your music. And they're just like, they're just these really cool, like friendly, laid back New Zealand guys who are like, oh, hey Tom, how's it going? Like, you know, oh, well, I liked your stuff too, sort of thing. And like, I think that was really important to me, was to realise that like, you can be cool and creative without having to be like aloof and standoffish. You can be somebody who's friendly and approachable and chatty, and then also make cool stuff. You know, just because you're a punk doesn't mean that you tell everyone to F off. You can also just be like, oh, hello.
And I guess that acceptance that it's okay to be a bit silly and strange and weird is writing comedy and making sketches, because you know, you regularly have to once a week put yourself in front of a camera and do something really silly and get some laughs for it.
Yeah, so you have to sort of accept that sort of Devo mentality, that maybe you're a bit weird and maybe that's fine, I guess.
Cool. So if people go onto YouTube and search for WMD, they'll be able to find Weapons of Mass Destruction, I guess.
Yeah, I think if you just search WMD, you get more Tony Blair than Tom Transfield. But if you search for WMD comedy, you certainly find us.
And Facebook as well.
Facebook as well. I'll do all our information. So facebook.com/WMD comedy. There's much more laughs and much less me rambling about stuff. But there is a bit of that.
Stuff!
Yeah.
Great. Wicked. Well, we will continue to rise above and ask the question, are we not sketch writers? No, we are Tom Transfield.
Wow. Did you write that one?
Might edit that out. Hey, thanks for listening. If you want to follow WMD, they're on Facebook, YouTube, and on Twitter, they're at WMD Comedy. I'm on Twitter as Henry_Raby, and if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/nerdpunks to support us. See you later, you big stupid heads!